Ask you to think about the miracles of Jesus, to think about there's some 30, 35 miracles of Jesus that we've got recorded in the New Testament. If you were to think about the miracles of Jesus, if you're a preacher, you don't get to answer this question. Which of the miracles do you think would be mentioned in all four gospel accounts? You know, there's Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. 30 to 35 miracles recorded in all four of those Gospels, and yet there's only one miracle, except for His resurrection, there's only one miracle that Jesus did that's in all four accounts. You would think there would be several. You would think there would be a number of miracles that all four Gospel writers talked about. Not the case. There's only one miracle that they all mention. Do you know which one it is? What would you guess? I mean, you got 30-something guesses you could make. All of them would be a good guess because Jesus did them all. Have I given you long enough to Google something? Which one would you think was the one that everybody talked about? Walking on water? I'd like to see that one in all of them. I think that one's in three of them, but it didn't make four. For some reason, I think it's Luke that excluded. I don't know why Luke didn't want to talk about walking on water. Not very fascinating to a physician for some reason. Which of the miracles is included in every gospel account? It may not. You think about which ones, and it's the feeding of the 5,000. Lavetta, did you say that? Lavetta Harmon said that. She didn't say it loud enough for me to hear it when I asked the question to begin with. Feeding of the 5,000 is found in all four gospel accounts. I don't know why. It's not revealed to us why God chose to put that one in all four and He didn't choose to put all the others in all four. Except think about this. 30-something miracles that Jesus did. Which of the miracles was witnessed by more people than this one? Which of the miracles impacted more people than this one? Which of the miracles did it personally touch more people than this one? You've got 5,000 what? Men, not including women and children. You think there were more women and children than there were men? The ladies will say yes. The men will say no. We always outnumber the women because we just have to be bigger and better for some reason. But women and children probably outnumbered the men. But even if they didn't, would you say there's at least 10,000 people there? 10,000 people got to eat dinner on Jesus. He provided it all. I want us to talk about that tonight. And tonight on the screen are all four gospel accounts listed. But instead of you having to flip back and forth to all of those places, I have printed these out for you all on one sheet of paper so that you can have them to look at and to reference. So these delightful volunteers with smiles on their faces. Oh, Chance just got volunteered too. Here, Josh, you got some more. If you all will pass those out, there's plenty of them, so spread them around. I think it's helpful. I think it's helpful to take especially something like this that has information in all four gospel accounts, but it's not the same information in all four accounts. There's obviously some details in some places that are not included in other places. So what I want us to do tonight is I want us to compare these four gospel accounts, and I want us to see the entirety of this miracle. You may learn some things tonight you didn't realize before about this miracle. We're going to take this into two parts. The first thing we're going to do tonight is just talk about the details of the miracle. I'm going to give you about 24 details of this miracle that are taken from these four gospel accounts. And then after we just talk about the details of how it went about, then we're going to talk about what kind of lessons can we learn. What kind of lessons can we apply from this particular miracle? So, you got these sheets coming around from the guys, and I think they will be helpful for you to kind of see everything all at one glance. Let me look at my sheet here. When you get your sheep, look over in the book of John, just in that right-hand column of the book of John. We learn some things from the book of John we don't learn in other places. We learn the time of year. We learn that it was just before Passover. And so this is early spring. We're going to see a little bit later that there was green grass on the ground. It's early spring. This is right before Passover. This happened to be the Passover that was 1 year before Jesus was crucified. John records those Passovers in the lifetime of, or in the ministry of Jesus. Everybody get one of the sheets? John's the one who records those Passovers during the ministry of Jesus. So here's the one that happens 1 year before he's crucified. You go down to verse 3 of John chapter 6, and it says it happens on a mountain. You know, I guess when I used to imagine this, I figured it had to be out in a wide open field, and it can be, but it was still up on a mountain that this particular miracle took place. Luke chapter 9 tells us that it happened, and Luke's the only one who tells us in Luke chapter 9 and verse 10 that it happened in the region of Bethsaida, which may not mean a whole lot to you unless you look at a Bible map. And this is a city on the northeast corner of the Sea of Galilee. You look in at least three of the accounts, and it calls it a deserted place. And yet, it's not a desert. It's called a deserted place, but it's not a desert place. How do we know it's not a desert place? We know it's not a desert place because there is much green grass. I think this is interesting to see. Look in John's account. Look in John chapter 6 and verse 10. You see in John 6 and verse 10, now there was much grass in the place. So if you got 10,000 people that are going to need to sit down, some people are going to get grass, some people are going to get dirt, some people are going to get ant piles, right? No, there's much grass in this area, and not just much grass, but in Mark chapter 6 and verse 39, it says that there's much green grass there. So there's plenty of room for all of these people who are going to need to sit down and have dinner together. But it's not a desert, although it's a deserted place. So this isn't a metropolis. This isn't a city area. So why are they out there? Well, we're going to see in just as we go through this that the miracle itself took place at evening time. Mark's account and Luke's account say that the day was well spent. The day was ending when this miracle was going to take place. The disciples, look in Mark chapter 6. Look in Mark chapter 6, verse 31. Jesus said to his disciples, "Come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while." Think about that. Jesus was pushing hard in his ministry, but what did he recognize? There was a need for rest. So he says, "Guys, let's go apart and rest for a while." The end of verse 31 says, "For there were many coming and going, and they did not even have time to eat. So they departed to a deserted place in the boat by themselves." Jesus gets in a boat with his disciples and says, "Guys, we're going to go over here and we're going to spend some time and rest by ourselves." Now, there could be a lot of reasons for that. He had been pushing hard. Again, this is coming up to the last year of his ministry. His ministry was 3.5 years long, so he'd been pushing hard for 2.5 years. Maybe he needed some downtime. But there was also another reason that he wanted to go and have some alone time. Do you know what Jesus learned right before this miracle? We only see it in Matthew's account and I think in Mark's account. What did Jesus learn right before he did this miracle? It's not on your sheet. John the Baptist had been beheaded. He learned that in the first 12 verses of Matthew chapter 14. The end of Matthew chapter 14 and verse 12, and then you see in verse 13, look in the top left-hand corner of your sheet, verse 13. When Jesus heard it, well, if you start there, what did he hear? He just heard that John, his friend, his forerunner, had been beheaded. What did Jesus want to do? He wanted to go away by himself. He just needed to have a little separation, need a little rest, need a little downtime at the thought of what had just transpired with his friend. You keep looking and you see in Mark chapter 6 and verse 33, the multitude saw them departing, and many knew him, and they ran there on foot. Jesus and his disciples get in the boat to go to the other side of the sea, and what happens to the multitude? Say, well, we'll catch up with him later. No, they spread the word. Do you see in verse 33, it says they ran there on foot from all the cities. And so they're trying to catch up with. I want you to think about how determined these people are to be around Jesus. Oh, he's going to get in the boat and go with his disciples? Uh-huh. Well, we know where he's going. So they ran on foot to get to where Jesus was. They could not get enough of him. Now, why are they following him? What does John chapter 6 and verse 2 on your sheet? What does John chapter 6 and verse 2 say was the reason that they were following him? The signs that he was doing, particularly what at the end of that verse? He was healing the diseased. They want to see some more of that. But they're following after Jesus so much, though, and I hadn't really paid attention so much to what that says in Mark 6, verse 33, that they ran there on foot. We're going to come back to this in just a moment. But Matthew 14, verse 14 says that Jesus was moved with compassion for the people. I want you to let that sink in for a minute. We're going to come back and talk about that in the lessons learned. And in Luke chapter 9 and verse 11, look at the top of that right of that third column. Luke chapter 9 and verse 11, before Jesus ever did this miracle, what did he do? He preached to them. It's not just that, you know, that the people found Jesus and they said, hey, we're hungry. And said, Jesus said, okay, let's eat. Jesus, before he ever did this miracle, talked to them. And in fact, Mark's account said he had many things to say to them. And then Luke's account in Luke chapter 9 and verse 11 tells us that the many things he had to say to them was about the church. He needed to talk to them about the kingdom. And then the very next, the end of that verse in verse 11 says, he healed those who were in need of healing. Look in verse 12. You're in Luke chapter 9 and verse 12. So his disciples, the 12 apostles, come to Jesus. I want you to think about this. And they say to Jesus, Jesus, send the multitudes away. They need to leave us, not just leave us alone. But the day is drawing to a close. They need to be sent away so that they can go to their surrounding towns and country. Why? Because you're in a deserted place. They need to go and find lodging, and they need to go and find food. So the disciples say, Jesus, we need to. You need to be thinking about this. There's 10,000-something people here. They need to be sent away so that they can make preparations for their evening, and they need to find food. Disciples say, send them away. What does Jesus say? Give them something to eat. I want you to imagine being one of the disciples, one of the 12, and you just said, hey, Jesus, you know, these people are saying they're kind of hungry. I don't know if that's what they said, but we need to send them away. You need to stop preaching. You need to extend the invitation, have the closing song, closing prayer, so that these people can go home and find some food. And Jesus says, you just give them some food. You be a disciple. What are you thinking? Me give them some food. Right. Look in John's account. Look in John chapter 6. Jesus in verse 5. Jesus lifted up his eyes and seeing a great multitude coming toward him, he said to Philip, where shall we buy bread that these may eat? Philip was from around that area, so Jesus thought, hey, maybe he knows where there's a local market or something. Where shall we buy bread that these may eat? But this he said to test him. For he himself knew what he would do. So Jesus is the one who starts this conversation about food. He says, where can we buy something for them? Philip answered him in verse 7 of John 6 and said, well, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, that every one of them may have a little. He says, even if we had 200 days' wages, we've got 10,000-something people here. If we had 200 days' wages, that'd be a lot of money, but not everybody, you know, if you had a buffet line, people at the end of the line, they'd be eating crumbs. They wouldn't even have crumbs to eat. Jesus, there's just not enough money. There's not enough food for this. Disciples say, send them away. Jesus says, don't send them away. Give them something to eat. 200 denarii, not enough. So look in Mark's account. Look at Mark chapter 6, verse 38, second column. Look at the question, Mark 6 and verse 38. Jesus said, find out how much food there is then. How many loaves do you have? I don't know. You're right. It's five. I don't know. When the disciples are asked, how many loaves do you have? Now, combine all of these accounts together. Go back over to John 6. Jesus asked the question, how many loaves do you have? Look in verse 9 of John chapter 6. Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to Jesus, there's a lad here who has five barley loaves and two fish, but what are they among so many? So Jesus says, go find out how much food there is. I don't know if there's these thousands of people and this boy is the only one who brought lunch. Or maybe everybody brought lunch, but they already ate lunch. This is evening time. It's supper time. And they don't have any food to eat. Maybe this boy is the only one among these. Jesus says, go find out how much food. We've got five barley loaves. We've got five flat cakes, five small pieces of bread, and we've got two sardines. Don't think big fish. I know you've seen pictures of this, and it's like they had a bass or something. Can you see this little boy walking around with five loaves of bread and two bass in his lunchbox? He would have been beaten up long before that if he had that much food, right? So he doesn't have much. And so Andrew's saying, what is this amongst? This is nothing. What can we do with this? It's in every account tells us that there were 5,000 men. I think it's, all of them except for Matthew put it up earlier in the miracle to tell us right at that point there's not enough food for 5,000. It's Matthew's account that puts it at the end of the miracle that tells us that Matthew's account's the only one that tells us there were women and children. Apparently, Mark, Luke, and John weren't thinking about the ladies. Sorry about that. But Matthew was a ladies' man, and so he's looking out for these ladies and children who were also... I'm just seeing if you're paying attention. Don't read into the text, all right? So Jesus says, all right, have everybody sit down. Mark chapter 6 and verse 39. Jesus commanded them to make them all sit down in groups. Why do you got to sit down in groups? When you go to a restaurant, why doesn't everybody just sit on the floor all in a mass in the middle of the restaurant? Would that be helpful? Would that be comfortable for one? But would it be helpful for your servers? What about the people sitting in the middle of the restaurant? That's not very helpful. Here's 10,000 something people. Jesus says, sit them in groups. In fact, I think it's Mark's account. Look at verse 40, Mark chapter 6 and verse 40. They sat down in ranks in hundreds and fifties. The word ranks there is a word that was used for garden plots. I want you to picture this side of a mountain. Before you picture people, picture a side of a mountain that has been planted like a garden. And everything is in beautiful rows. Maybe it's flowers. You got a picture of flowers, just beautiful flowers all up in there. Or you got these crops up in rows, but they're in sections so that the farmer can get to them. Now it's people. And you've got these blocks of people, these garden plots of people in 50s or hundreds, all in these different sections. You ever been to our Ladies' Day when we put 300 women in our family room? And we put them at those tables, and servers, the men, get to come and serve the ladies at the tables. And there are, every one man has maybe one section of tables or two section of tables. Jesus organized his disciples. All right, get them to sit down, get groups of 50s, okay, Philip, you got that one over there. Peter, you got that group over there. Andrew, you got that group over there. And I want you to see Jesus as the maitre d' here that's saying, put them into sections. You've got these people over here. This isn't going to be chaos. Jesus, and we'll talk about it in a minute, but Jesus is very orderly in how he's handling all of them. Look in John chapter 6 and verse 11. Jesus took the loaves. He looked up to heaven and he gave thanks. Every account, John's account is the one that says he gave thanks. The other accounts, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, said he blessed it and he broke the bread. He gave thanks. Something simple, right? Before Jesus ate, he gave thanks. Can you think of another time when Jesus took bread and gave thanks? Lord's Supper, when he institutes the Lord's Supper, he did it first here, where he takes the bread, he looks up to heaven, he gives thanks, he breaks the bread, and then he gave the food to the disciples, and the disciples were to go and distribute to the people. I want you to imagine, if you've been here for Our Lady's Day, I want you to imagine, here are your servers, and they bring the chicken out to the table, and then you got the mashed potatoes, and you got the carrots, and they got the drinks, and then you got the strawberry shortcake. And I want you to imagine your servers, that they come up to the window and say, "Man, these ladies are hungry. We need some more chicken." And I want you to imagine that all we have is one little pot, but every time these servers come up, we just keep giving them chicken. More chicken. Every time they come up, this pot is like unending. It's just a little pot, but every time they come up, they need more chicken. What does it look like when Philip comes up and says, "Jesus, I need some more bread. Jesus, I'm running out of fish." What does he do? He just takes the bread and he breaks off some more and gives it to Philip. He takes a few more fish out of there. If you're one of the disciples, how does that look to you? "Jesus, I need some more. I just came up here and I carried away as much as I could, and now I need some more." Jesus took five little pieces of bread and two little sardines, and it's unending. He just keeps giving and giving and giving. Look in John chapter 6 and verse 11. He had given thanks, distributed to disciples to those who were sitting down. Likewise of the fish. What does the last part of verse 11 say? How much did they eat? As much as they wanted. It wasn't, "Well, you know, we're kind of holding back a little bit. We want to make sure everybody has enough here. And so, you know, we're just going to ask you not to eat that much." They ate. The other accounts say they ate and were filled. But it's John's account that says they ate as much as they wanted. "Can I have seconds? Fantastic. Can I have thirds? Can I have some more? Can I have yours? Can I have some?" They ate as much as they wanted. And then when they were done eating as much as they wanted, how much did they take up? 12 baskets. How much did they? Did they start with one basket full of food? I don't think so. They started with a little lunch box. That little lunch box you used to send your kids to school with. This little boy had room to spare in his lunchbox. And they took up 12 baskets full. Sometimes people say it was just the bread, but Mark's account in verse 43, Mark 6 verse 43 says it wasn't just the bread, but it was the fish too. You've got 12 baskets full of leftovers. So have you ever cooked dinner and you put into Tupperware more than what you started with? You ever done that? I mean, maybe you cooked dinner and it wasn't very good, and so you put into Tupperware the same amount of whatever it was that you served. Nobody took anything. They were, you know, observing the fasting day or something. But have you ever had more? Did you ever have to go to the store and buy more Tupperware because you ended up with more food than what you started with? 12 baskets full. What kind of impact is this having on the people? What's the last bottom right corner of your page? What do the people say? When they had seen this sign, they said, "Truly, this is the prophet that is to come into the world." I want you to imagine that you were there. You saw all of that happen. What a miracle. I mean, we've just looked at 24 details that these four accounts give us of this amazing event. An amazing event that, could this be something that would be denied very easily? "Oh, I don't think that happened." There's 10,000 something people that would say, "No, I was there. I mean, it happened. I saw the little boy, you know, give up his lunch, and I saw Jesus. Just I don't know how it was. I mean, how do you explain it? How do you explain that Jesus just kept taking the bread and kept breaking it? I mean, at some point, you've had the Lord's Supper, right? I mean, is that the kind of bread? It's not the same thing. It's not barley. That's not barley bread. But when you think of breaking bread, do you think of the Lord's Supper? How many times can you take a loaf of unleavened bread? How many times can you take it and keep breaking it until you can't break it anymore? Well, it depends on the size of the piece, right? I mean, if it's one of those little pieces that we get, you might be able to break it, you know, 12 or 15. But if one of the bigger pieces, maybe you can get 25. How many times did Jesus break this bread? 10,000-something times. Kept breaking it. Here's some more. Here's some more. Here's some more. Can't be denied. What an amazing event. All right. I want you to tell me, before we look at some of these, I want you to tell me, what are some lessons that we need to learn from this? What are some lessons? Bible lessons, life lessons that we need to learn from this miracle. What are some applications?
God will supply.
God will supply.
Give and it shall be given to you.
Say it again.
Give and it shall be given to you.
God is in control. Say it again.
Nothing's impossible.
Jesus, well, you only got this little boy, 5 loaves, 2 fish. What's that among so many? What is that statement from the disciples? What's that among so many? It's more than enough. What else? What other lessons should we take from this? Say it again. Always pack your lunch. You never know how much of a difference that might make in the lives of others. He gave them enough and then some more. What are some lessons we learned from this?
Good teaching point for the apostles.
Say it again.
Good teaching point for the apostles.
What do you mean by that? Okay, so it was a good teaching point, good example, good lesson learned even for the disciples themselves. John, you said something, and then Gwen. You can't beat God given. Nope, he gave them more than they could handle. Gwen?
Julie Charles says, always appreciate the small things.
Speak up, Julie. I didn't hear you say it. Always appreciate the small things in life. I want you to think about this. Do we sometimes look down on children and say, it's just a kid. What good can a kid do? Who was like the shining star in all of this besides Jesus? Who's the shining star? You got this kid. Of course, the kid's mom. Give credit where credit is due, right? This kid gave up his lunch to this guy who came up. I don't know if they're going in around everybody. I mean, Jesus says, how many loaves do you have? You got some? You got some? You got some? You got anything? You got any? You got some? You got some? You got some? And this boy says, no, this is what I got. What other lessons?
Be thankful.
Be thankful. What other lessons?
Compassion.
Say it again.
Compassion.
Compassion. Let's talk about that. We find a man named Jesus who these accounts say had compassion. Now I want you to back up in the story just a little bit. Number one, Jesus was tired. He wants to go and have rest. He wants a period of rest. Number two, he's not only tired, Jesus is sad. It wasn't just that John died. It wasn't that he got old and he died. It wasn't that he had been sick for a long time and boy, he's better off now because he'd been sick for long. And I'm not saying that makes death easier. I want you to think about, it's not just that John died. It's that he was killed. And it wasn't just that he was killed, but he's beheaded and his head is put on a silver platter and is delivered. No, you just learned that about your friend. What do you want to do? I need some away time. I got to process this. And so Jesus is on his way to have some away time, and these thousands of people come running to him. Hey, we found you. Did you miss us? You missed us, didn't you? You got over here. We beat you here. You missed us. Here we are again. And the Bible doesn't say that Jesus was like, would you just leave me alone? That would have been our reaction. The Bible says that Jesus saw these people and had compassion on them. His compassion overcame his weariness. As tired and as sad as he was, he looked at these people and his love for them and his concern for them overcame himself. Do we need to learn from that? That sometimes there are people who are in need that we need to have compassion for them and overlook even our own needs and our own wants at the time. Sometimes our needs and our wants are all we can see. At this moment, their needs and their wants was all that Jesus could see. Is that a lesson? I think so. He's moved with compassion for these individuals. Is he still moved with compassion for us? Jesus looks at us. Does he have compassion for us today? I mean, he went to the cross and died for us. That shows his compassion. But the Bible says today, in addition to that, he is our mediator. He is the one that is interceding on our behalf. 1 John chapter 2 says that he is our advocate with the Father. Do you think Jesus, as our mediator, our intercessor, our advocate, you pick the word that you want. Do you think that Jesus does that kind of half-heartedly? Oh, God, here's... God, it's David again. Let me tell you what he said. It's the same dumb thing David says every time he comes, but I'm going to share it with you again, God, because it's what I'm supposed to do. You think Jesus does it half-heartedly? You think Jesus gets weary of hearing all of our needs and all of our wants? Or does he still have compassion? Does he still go to the throne with our needs and our wants and say, God, is David again? He hasn't given up on asking us for what he wants and what he needs. What about us having compassion for other people? Do we need to learn from Jesus? Bible says he didn't just have compassion. There's a verb before compassion. Not just have compassion. He was moved with compassion. What does that indicate? He didn't just have compassion. He was moved with compassion. Can you have compassion? Another word for compassion is pity. Can you have pity for somebody but not be moved with pity? Oh, I feel so sorry for them. It's just such a sad thing. They're just really down and out. That's really bad. All right, what are we going to do today? I hope we're going to do something fun today. Jesus saw them in that condition and he was moved to do something about it. How about us? Can we say the same thing? Lesson number one. At least on this list, lesson number about 10 from what we talked about already is Jesus was a man of compassion. Number two, who said this? Somebody said this. Jesus can supply our needs. Did Jesus do that here? Did he supply their needs? I want you to see what we pointed out in Luke's account. Before he supplied their physical needs, he supplied their spiritual needs. Sometimes we focus so much on what somebody's physical needs are and trying to meet their physical needs that we forget that they first have a spiritual need before we even think about what their physical needs might be. Because we might be able to meet and surpass even and take care of somebody's physical needs, but have we really done them good in taking care of their physical needs if we haven't done something to take care of their spiritual needs? There are individuals who are always going to have physical needs. But shame on us if we don't try to do something to take care of their spiritual needs. What do we mean by that? What is a person's greatest need on this earth? 3 squares a day? What's their greatest need on this earth? Salvation of their soul. Gospel of Jesus Christ. We're going to talk more about it in just a minute, but that's what God is ready. But add to that the physical side of this. What does Matthew 6 and verse 33 say? Seek ye first kingdom of God and his righteousness. Not just seek first the church and the kingdom of God, but seek first His righteousness, doing what is right in His sight. And when you do that, what does the rest of the verse say? And all of these things, 75-inch LCD screen, a Nintendo Switch, an Xbox, a brand new car, a 3,500 square foot house, all of these things will be added unto you, right? Right? That's what Jesus said, the word all in that verse, right? All of these things will be added to you. Except what's the context? What do you need? Your daily needs He will take care of. Have you seen that to be true in your life? Have you seen to be true in your life the fact that when you put the Lord first, that He takes care of those things in your life? You say, well, He's not doing enough. I'm not quite where these individuals are yet. Is He taking care of you? It's in this same context where Jesus says, look at the birds. Is God taking care of the birds? And then what's His point? Are you not of much more value than the birds? He's going to take care of you. You see fathers taking care of their children. You go into chapter 7. You see fathers taking care of their children. What about your heavenly Father? Will He take care of His children? God will take care of our physical needs just as much as He'll take care of our spiritual needs. Think about the work that we are doing in the Bahamas. Let me rephrase that. Think about the work that the Lord is doing in the Bahamas and using us to help Him. Are there efforts being made to meet physical needs of individuals in the Bahamas? Yeah, because they lost their physical well-being. But what good would it do? What good would it do for the people in the Bahamas if we could do it? What good would it do to pour $400 million worth of stuff into the Bahamas and give them mansions to live in with all sorts of air conditioning and all sorts of everything that they need and brand new cars? What good would it do to give them a simple home and a simple lifestyle with physical needs if we don't do something to meet spiritual needs? What good would we have done? Here we are to be stewards of that which God has given to us, not only to look after physical things, but to look after those things that are of much more value. Number three, Jesus can take that which is seemingly small and make it a big deal. 5 loaves, 2 fish, not a big deal. In the hands of Jesus, a big deal. What about us? Do we have a whole lot to offer in the grand scheme? Do we have a whole lot to offer God? Can God take my little talents? Well, I it's not really much I can do. You know, in the church, you know, everybody else is, they've got much more abilities. I really can't do what they're doing. I'm just, you know, it's just not me. It's not my strength. Can God take your little strength, your little talents, your little possessions? Can God take our littleness and use it for great things for His cause? He just did it. Yeah. The mustard seed is a good example of that, right? So when we think, well, I don't have that much to offer. Was it Mary Mary in Mark chapter 14 who came and anointed Jesus? And of course, Judas was all upset about that. You know, why would we waste that kind of... And Jesus says about Mary in Mark chapter 14, she has done what she could. Here, she's preparing my body for burial. And would Mary have liked to have done more? Sure, she would have liked to have done, but she did what she could. What about me? Well, I sure would like to do more. I sure would like to give more. Okay, great. But are you giving and are you doing what you can give and what you can do? And letting God take it and magnify it. Let God take it and use it for His glory. Little old me can be used in big things for the cause of God. Let me point out a couple more real quick. We need to wrap this up. A couple more lessons real quick. Jesus worked in an orderly manner. I think that's interesting to note. Before he started going through all of this, he laid out all of the details, and we could talk more about that, but we won't. Jesus gave thanks for the food. We talked about this. Did Jesus give thanks for the food in public? Was he in public? Was he in a public place with a lot of people around? And he's getting ready to eat? And what did he do before he did that? He gave thanks. Is that okay when you go out to a restaurant and eat to give thanks? Jesus did it. And 1 Timothy chapter 4 says we need to give thanks. And here's an example of the Lord himself doing it in public. Now, not just in public. We need to have a heart of thanksgiving for all he's given to us. Everything we got, everything we have comes from above. And we need to be thankful for it. Next to last one. Jesus expects us, his disciples, to work, to carry, and to distribute. Jesus is on a mountain, right? Everybody needs something to eat. You think there were any rocks on this mountain? I've been on a lot of mountains. All over this country, I've been on a lot of mountains. There are rocks everywhere on those mountains. You ever been maybe you haven't. You ever been driving in mountainous country and there's a caution sign, one of these yellow signs along the side of the road that says, "Watch for falling rocks." Why? Because here's a cliff, here's a mountainside right here that rocks maybe. There's surely rocks all over the place. Why didn't Jesus turn the rocks into bread? Here you go, poof. Y'all just bend down and eat something. You know what that would have taken away? It would have taken away the opportunity and the responsibility of his disciples to serve. Oh, Lord, there's 12 of us and there's 10,000 something of them. Lord, do the math. That's like me serving 1,000 people. Lord, I don't think we have enough time. I don't have enough energy. He could have taken that away. Poof, here's your food. Bend down, pick it up and eat it. But instead, he put it upon the disciples to take what they had and what they were given and to give it to those who were in need. We have something better than that physical bread. We've got the bread of life. And everybody around us is starving to death for this. Who's responsible for getting this into the hands of those who are hungry? Into the hands of those who are in desperate need of it. In some people's life, it is evening time. In some people's life, they are coming to the end of their day. And it says to us even more, we need to get the gospel into their hands. It's not going to happen by magic. It's not going to happen, the Lord just poof, here's the gospel, pick it up and read it. It is our responsibility. Romans chapter 10 says, how shall they hear unless one is sent? We've been sent for that to be filled, for that responsibility to be filled. Last thing I want us to see is that Jesus didn't want anything to go to waste. Did he? Here's the baskets. Take up 10 baskets full of leftovers. So we shouldn't waste our leftovers. I don't think that's the grand purpose here to learn. What about in our lives? Do we ever waste our talents? Do we ever waste our time? Do we ever waste our possessions? Do we ever not use ourselves to the fullest in our service to God? We get one chance at living on this earth for the Lord. Jesus doesn't want us to waste it. He wants us to use it to its fullest. An interesting miracle recorded in all four gospel accounts. Something that touched more lives, perhaps, than any other miracle that Jesus did. With a whole host of lessons for us to learn and to take from it. Let's bow together and pray, and then we'll be dismissed.